Today, seeking a value anchor in stormy weather. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. Today, I'm joined by Lynette Zhang. Lynette, great to see you again.
Oh, so happy to see you, Martin. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's good to have you back on, and a very opportune time to have a conversation about the markets and what's going on. One of the things that I find with my conversations, well, I have a number of one-on-one conversations with people, is there is a level of uncertainty around at the moment, a level of sense of we don't know quite what's going on. It looks pretty concerning. And, you know, trying to work out where the value anchor is. In other words, where do you hang your hat in terms of trying to secure the investments you've got and potentially lay a foundation for the future is becoming more and more of an important question for people at the moment. And I guess a good starting point, and, you know, let's be honest, Trump's come in and he's starting to move the pieces on the board quite a lot, isn't he? And so in a way, what Trump is doing is a big part of the story.
Oh, it's not the only part of the story, but absolutely, because I feel like he needs to move us into crisis to move us into the next iteration of money.
Right. So there's more here than just happenstance. There is actually some intent and some process going on here. And I was talking to somebody today who was saying it's too much of a coincidence that all of these things are falling the way they're falling. And so what do you think that future state might look like then?
Well, I mean, you know, Martin, I've studied currency life cycles since 1987, and we are absolutely 100% at the end of this most current fiat money experiment. And they need to move us into a new digital system. And the system didn't just die or isn't going to die. It died in 2008. I'm 100% certain. I was 100% certain then. That's why I became a prepper. And where we are is ushering in that new position. And the markets are so fragile with all these debt walls coming due and having to either this debt having to be rolled over or new debt issuance into this environment. This is crazy. Yeah, very fragile.
Yeah, and we've already seen significant corrections in, for example, the NASDAQ, and even Bitcoin has gone down a little bit relatively recently. I guess post the announcements last week about the strategic reserve, which really wasn't quite as strategic as some people thought it might be. But below the hood, I've always think there are three things to think about. The first is the amount of debt washing around the system is bigger than it's ever been. And that's true in the US, it's true around the world. And you know, the latest charts just keep going up. Second, what we know is that whilst there's been quite a significant shift of wealth to a few percent, the truth is that the larger proportion of people aren't feeling the wealth effect at all. In fact, they're going very much backwards at the moment. And the inflationary pressures that people were expecting to have been, you know, quashed by now are still there, and they are likely to return simply because of greater money supply equals greater inflation.
I agree with 100% of everything that you just said, and I think that it's really getting worse because the central banks have no tools to really regulate the rate and speed of inflation. But the real problem is that there's no purchasing power left in the currency. And all those layers of confidence, bank to bank, central bank to central bank, markets to central bank, there's only one layer of confidence left, and that's the public confidence in the dollar, in those that are in charge. And I'm not so sure that that's in such great shape. I mean, it's been declining for quite some time. And once the public loses confidence, it's very, very hard to get back, if not impossible, as witnessed by Zimbabwe, right? And their new currency, the Zig Gold, which was supposed to be backed, but it isn't. It's pegged. It's not backed, meaning it was never in physical form, nor could you go in with one of the Zig Gold and come out with a piece of gold for the system. So yeah, they did the overnight devaluation in October, and yeah, population does not trust them. Nor should they, frankly.
And to my mind, one of the critical points here is, you know, we talk about inflation as prices rising, but alternatively, you could argue that inflation is actually the devaluation of money. So you need more money than you used to need to go buy the same thing. And if you think of it like that, then you've got to ask the question, you know, why is money being devalued? And who are the winners and who are the losers?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was like I was listening to somebody the other day and they were talking about stimulus, right? Well, what is stimulus? Stimulus is creating more debt and more of this stuff. That's what the stimulus is. And whoever is closest to the central bank when that money first gets created, they get to use it when it has the highest level of purchasing power. And I mean, look at what BlackRock is doing, buying a good chunk of the ports all around the world, not just on either side of the Panama Canal. And this private equity, you know, it has me really worried. Private equity, I'm not going to lie. Private equity has me very, very worried because the easy money is gone and now they're putting their feelers out to the public. And it's that risk transfer as you were talking about, right? The naive public just gobbles this stuff up and they don't realize the real money has already been made. All they're really buying is the risk.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. And I'd argue that that's happened with Bitcoin because, of course, over the recent years, we had the big financial firms coming in and effectively, you know, dominating a lot of the behavior of Bitcoin, making money on the way through and then hopping off again. And now they're looking for other asset classes as well to do the same with. Even down here in Australia, you know, it's quite interesting that we've now got BlackRock saying that they want to be helping to create a long-term fixed rate mortgage for Australians, and they're also talking about investing in build to rent property as though that's going to somehow solve the, you know, the housing situation. The point is there is an agenda here, particularly among these very large players, to just continue to milk asset classes and to grab money on the way through and make returns. I also agree with you about the private equity stuff because it's not really regulated, it's not controlled. And quite interestingly, of course, nobody quite knows where a lot of that money's going.
Right. But also these assets, what they're putting them into are not liquid and people are very naive and they don't really realize that. And I think that's a great way to lock that wealth in that system and transfer that wealth from the many to the few.
Well, that's exactly what I'm seeing too. And, you know, I get a little frustrated with some people who say, oh, it's not too bad, you know. Property is a lot more expensive than it used to be and it's harder to buy, but is it really that bad? Well, yeah, just look where we are and look where we came from and play the tape forward. Because what I sometimes say is you can't just assume that everything's going to stop. The question is, where is the trajectory taking us? And earlier on, you said a couple of really important things, and I just want to come back around to them. First was digital, and the second was effectively trying to find a point of value. So let's unpack both of those in a little bit, more of a sense. On the digital story, how are you looking at this?
Well, honestly, I do know that digital assets are here to stay. I'm not naive about that. But considering the fact that I've studied currency life cycles since 1987, I know how they make that shift. And, you know, Bitcoin, I never thought it was a coincidence or just a happy circumstance that Bitcoin was born in January of 2009 and quantitative easing, all that free money, came out in March of 2009. And I believe that the digital assets, particularly Bitcoin, but all of them really, are Trojan horses to get adoption, to make it easier to shift into the system, because they know how to do this. There are over 4,800 currencies that do not exist anymore. And when one currency dies, another one comes in and takes its place. It can still be called the dollar, right? Or the Aussie dollar or whatever. They can keep that name, but it's very, very different. And the way that they do it, which we've seen, is let those assets, think about the roaring 20s, where for the first time, the public could actually take on debt. right? They had that leverage ability. And the Roaring Twenties was about lots of money being printed into the system and people feeling rich, trying to emulate the industrialists that were making a fortune on Wall Street. Problem was, just like I'm seeing today, that the public is getting in and the insiders that understand this Ponzi scheme are getting out. But it was sold as being outside of the system. And there are really still diehards that kind of, I don't know, do they really think it's outside of the system? To your point, Martin, the big players went in and they took it over. And they turned it into an asset class that, I mean, call me crazy, call me stupid, call me whatever you want, but I look for utility. And what I know is gold and silver is used in every single sector of the global market, meaning it has the broadest base of utility and therefore the broadest base of demand. Where's this stuff used? One place. Where's this stuff used? One place. I'm sorry, when you're going into a fight, do you want a penknife or do you want a bazooka? This is not even a penknife. These are bazookas, and it's because of the demand and the functionality. You want to get to safety, go to where there's the most demand. I mean, this is not rocket science, it's just logic.
Right. And one of the observations in recent times, talking about that value anchor, of course, there's been a considerable amount of action with regard to gold. The price is higher than it's, has been. It's wobbled around a little bit, just below the 3,000, but looking pretty good. But I'm interested in the physical gold movements that have happened quite recently and the massive flow back to the COMEX and from the Bank of England via Switzerland, because, of course, the gold bars aren't the same size, so they have to be reformed and then shipped over. There's something really quite important going on here, isn't there?
There really is. And I would actually even liken it to a repatriation. And there's a lot of problems that will come up from this, because to your earlier point, these bullion banks are borrowing from the Bank of England, who's holding that gold for other countries. And they're shipping it over here to the US, and then it's getting delivered out to whoever executed that contract, some big whales. And that is different than what we've seen before, but I'm wondering what would happen if countries started asking to repatriate their gold, much as they did after India denominated 85% of their currency, and there was a huge rush to get their gold back. And I'm thinking that we're about to see this battle. And when you talk about Wall Street prices, I'm sorry, Martin, does anybody really think that they're getting any good price discovery and real valuations in anything in these markets? Because if you do, there's this bridge in Brooklyn that we could discuss.
Absolutely. Well, of course, valuation, quote unquote, is what all the talking heads are on about all of the time. But when you actually peel it back, remember that they will have already taken positions ahead of where they're directing other people to go to. And unfortunately, a lot of people, I don't think, quite understand the way this works. But on the gold point specifically, and I want to sort of bring it back to what you said, gold still has the function potentially of a value anchor. So one of the interesting questions to me is it feasible that at some point the US will say, actually, dollar gone, we're going to go back to the gold point of value? Or do you think that's a bridge too far?
Well, considering the fact that every single government and central bank has a gold revaluation account, and that historically, and there's over 4,800 times that this has happened, 100% of the time, they bring gold in once confidence is lost by the public. Then they bring gold back in to anchor that confidence again. But is it going to work? Not if you can't pull it out. And that's what I'm really fighting for. And, everybody knows how much I love Australia. I've now been there twice. And every time I go, I feel like my work just goes to a brand new level, and I see and I learn things that that weren't there before, or maybe they were bubbling under the surface. But this is really a global issue, and it's this global community. I mean, I've been, you know, at Zhang Enterprises, we really focus on the sound money movement and developing communities both locally and globally. So when you're talking about the anchor, well, what do you need to be well anchored? You need food, water, energy, security, barterability, wealth preservation, community, and shelter. And my first trip to Australia, even though community had been a part of my mantra for, well, since 2008 when I started developing the mantra, the reality is that I hadn't really been executing on that, but I realized in that moment when I was there that that's really what we have to focus on more, is developing that community, because one person can't really do very much, right? This is a huge machine, but there are 8.4 billion people in this world. And if we even just got 3%, a small little 3% to convert their garbage fiat into sound money, I believe that we could have a shot at having a component of gold, a component of sound money back in the system again, because what gold really does is it creates fiscal, it forces fiscal responsibility. And you tell me who in government really wants to be fiscally responsible?
Well, I think that people in government, their first priority is to get re-elected, of course, and so they'll say anything, do anything, sell their grandmother or whatever, right, to try and get re-elected. So power becomes effectively their end goal rather than what's right for broader communities. And I'm certainly seeing that across Australia at the moment, a lot of frustration with the political system. But, the other point there is on the financial side of things. Central banks, of course, have been part of the problem and are continuing to be part of the problem. They've basically shrinked down to a single tool, which is the interest rate tool. They do have potentially other tools they could use if they really wanted to, take a different tack. But why would they? Because they're still being paid. They're not actually being hauled over the coals when they get the decisions wrong. And, of course, central banks are pretty bad at estimating correctly what's trying to happen, and believe that they know in this crystal ball of theirs that they can tell what's happening, when in fact perhaps they don't really quite understand what's going on. So there's a big question in my mind about, you can't really trust central banks, you can't trust the political system, so where do you put your trust?
Oh, in gold and silver I trust. You know, because I mean, this is so simple, and it has so, again, I go back to utility. It is used in every single sector of the global economy. So that's what I trust, and also developing that community. You know, my good friend George Gammon did a little study in South America where he went out and he offered people Bitcoin, silver, or gold to barter with. He couldn't get any takers on the Bitcoin at all. And he had the best luck with silver because obviously it's a lot less expensive. And then he also could get people to take the gold. But I found that was really an interesting, I thought that was really an interesting study that he did. And it shows, it's not just what do I trust, what do the people trust? Because that's that confidence piece. I could trust gold and silver. I know its history for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and that's probably a lot of what explains the global central bank's buying of more gold than they ever have since they started tracking it back in the 50s, especially the last 3 years, because they know that the system is dead and that we're transitioning into a new system, and they want to remain in control and in power. And to your point earlier, I mean, we've got blockchain technology. The individuals really could vote. We could do with a whole lot. We don't need a central bank, nor do we need as many representatives as we have.
Well, especially when those representatives don't necessarily represent us. They represent the interests of the money power, which of course is part of the issue. Now, just as we sort of think about gold, there is quite an important distinction between physical gold, you know, the gold you can hold and the gold you can touch, and the gold contracts which are traded. And there's a one-to-many relationship between the underlying and the gold contracts. One of the things that I observe is that a lot of the shenanigans is actually in those gold contracts, as people are taking positions and trying to essentially trade the difference and the gap. So that's something that I think people need to understand, that, you know, there is a difference between holding a gold contract and actually holding physical gold.
Well, there are a couple things in there, Martin. So, you know, first of all, that goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the movement of the physical gold to the U.S. Because in Europe, that's a more physical market. But in the U.S., that's really primarily just a digital market. And so here you have really the tail wagging the dog. And that's why I said earlier, it looks to me like this could easily be a repatriation, because to your earlier point, you know, I believe it was 2009, and the Bank for International Settlements tracks derivatives. And at that point in time, the central banks in general were not really all that involved in the derivative market. And the derivatives are just a big bet, and you can't convert into the underlying, just simply put. And I saw the derivative gold holdings at that time were for every 1 ounce of physical gold that exists, there were 62,000 digital ounces of gold. After that, they changed the way that they account for it, so it doesn't look the same, but then that's what they do, don't they? They don't really change behavior. They just change how they account for the behavior so that it looks different, but then that gives them room to get even worse. And so, yeah, it's definitely different. And if you're referring to ETFs, if you go into stockcharts.com, free, stockcharts.com, and you pull up a relative performance chart, and you put in there the dollar sign and gold, and then you click on that relative performance chart, then you can also put in the gold ETF, GLD. And if you look at it over time, what you see is that the value of the ETF based on their gold holdings has been going down and down and down, because they sell off on a daily basis. And they read the prospectus, it says it in there. They sell it off on a daily basis to pay their fees. And you do not have any access to that. Now, JP Morgan Chase has access to it. The big players have access to the underlying gold. But you, the individual, you're not buying gold. You're buying shares of a trust that are specifically designed to follow and track the spot gold market, which is a lie anyway.
Well, that's exactly right. And highly manipulated, of course, those contracts. And there's quite a lot of evidence to suggest that the big players are able to move the market quite considerably should they choose to do so.
Yeah, exactly. Just like they can do it with anything else when it's a very scarce commodity, right? There's a finite amount of physical gold. Even if they find new gold holdings that for some reason the Department of the Interior that tracks that every year, that they didn't find, it doesn't matter. There's only so much gold that is out there. But this stuff, there's as much as they can print. And with central banks buying back their government's debt, monetizing that debt is the way to say that. I mean, there's an unlimited amount of that. But here's the interesting thing. This is sound money. This is fiat money, government debt-based money. They're both money. They're just the flip sides of the coin, right? The more of this that they create, in terms of that, the higher this goes. Is it really the prices of the houses going up, or the cost of eggs going up, or is it really the value of the currency going down?
Yep, Well, as I said earlier on, my belief is that you need to look at it like that, that effectively everything, you know, is being devalued because effectively the value of money is being devalued. Why? Because you're creating ever more on the supply side. You know, look at the money supply continuing to go up, and therefore you've got more money chasing the same goods, and that, you know, all of that economic theory. But let's bring it home then. So, you know, ordinary people trying to navigate their way through this maze, trying to, you know, live their life and trying to hopefully thrive and survive in this time of uncertainty. What do you think they should be doing?
I think that they should be learning a lot of new skills. I think they should be coming together in local community. I think they need to figure out how to ensure that they have enough food, water, energy, security, barterability, wealth preservation, community, and shelter. And I think they should know, they should not be hesitating, that you need a foundation of sound money, because that, like the central bank, same reason that the central banks are accumulating it, is to maintain their freedom and their choice. That's the same reason why you and I should be accumulating it. And I'd like to say that, you know, that there are many, many different ways that you can accumulate it. So regardless of what your budget might be, because gold and silver in any form is monetary at its base. These happen to be some sterling silver flatware that I picked up at yard sales and estate sales over the years. And, you know, they're, guess what? They're 92.5% pure. If I need a little piece of it, I would have no trouble clipping this off. I don't care about it at all. But you can also do it with fractional pieces. But it's important, because some people don't have or feel like they don't have enough wealth to accumulate. Then you accumulate skills, because that's barterable. Any talent that you have, any hard asset, tangible, anything that you have, that is also barterable. So coming together in community, what does that mean? That means that everybody brings the gifts and the tools that they have, and they work collectively for safety. So when you're talking about that anchor, I would say local community is probably the single most important anchor that you can have. And then further than that, it's the global community. This is a global issue. We need to have sound money in our system again, and we have to demand it. And the way that we demand it is really a quiet revolution. Just convert this garbage into sound money. That's how you accumulate it. And if enough people do it, I'm really hoping that we can have a shot. And if enough states in the U.S. and elsewhere, if enough places will adopt it as legal tender, so that changes the tax laws on it. And, you know, let's tax money to keep people away from real money. Let's make that tax really good so that people don't want to do it. These are things that they definitely do talk about. How big a fee, how big a tax, how big a whatever do we have to charge to discourage people from taking distributions from their retirements or money markets? I mean, that's what the changes are about. How big a fee do they need to see so that they just keep their wealth vulnerable? Well, I would say protect my wealth, and I don't care what they do about that, because I need money that is outside of the system. Otherwise, God, look what happened in Canada a couple years ago. Well, back in the, I guess it was 2020 probably, when they shut down the truckers, a peaceful demonstration. Government did not like what they were doing. Boom, you're locked out. And oh, by the way, you gave somebody $5 that was already locked out of their account. Boom, you're locked out. Well, if they locked me out, I have food, water, energy, security, barterability, wealth preservation, community, and shelter. I can survive.
Yeah, I think that's a really important checklist for people, isn't it, to go through and just to make sure that they've really thought about this right. Don't get caught up in the, buy the next, the next cycle, buy the next property, buy the next whatever. The financial system is creaking at the seams. It's been creaking at the seams for quite some time. I think you said 2008, and I think that was the real turning point. We haven't really recovered from that. And whilst they try and continue to sort of keep all the balls in the air, the truth is we know that they're going to come down, and people are going to get caught in the, as they fall. So people need, I think, to really take an initiative themselves. Don't expect that the politicians will save them. Don't expect that the central banks will save them. There's got to be a different path. And that's why I think this is a really important conversation. Lena, if people want to find out more about your philosophy and particularly about the community, where do they go?
Well, they can go. I'm very active on YouTube and Twitter at the Lynette Zhang, and Instagram and Facebook at Lynette Zhang. And we are redoing our website, but that's LynetteZhang.com. So yes, I'm all over the place, and I don't know quite yet when I'm going to be back to Australia, but I'm planning another trip. I love Australia. I don't love your politics, but I love your people, and your coffee is phenomenal.
Yes, well, I think the current election coming up in Australia will be a bit of a show, because neither side of politics know what they're doing. So that will be interesting, which is why I believe that we need to turn this pyramid upside down. And rather than seeing the politicians and, you know, the bureaucrats and the technocrats top down telling us what to do, let's turn it around and sort of build out from the local communities, build out from people getting together and thinking about these things differently. Because I believe that that is the only way that we can actually lay a future, whether it's in Australia or wherever, that actually means that ordinary people can thrive and survive, rather than the political class or the moneyed class thriving and reviving, which is, frankly, what's happening now.
Exactly. And I could not agree with you more. I could not. And so, you know, we have to come together. There is power in numbers. There are way more of us than there are of them. It doesn't need to be violent. Just have a sound money movement on a global basis and demand our power back. Because when you could walk in the bank with this and walk out with this, you had the power over the politicians, because this created restrictions. It forced fiscal responsibility. Take our power back. Let's take it back. And you know, for me, I look at it like this too, because, you know, I'm 70 years old, so I'm going to be around another 30 years. I'm fine. But I have children. I have grandchildren. Someday maybe I'll have great grandchildren and many generations that come afterwards. And that's who this fight is really for, Martin. That's who it's really for. And we have to do it. We have to do it. We don't. The alternative to me is so ugly that we have to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I do what I do on YouTube for the same reason, because I believe that there are really critical decisions that need to be taken, and we need to change tack. We need to turn a few things on their heads, and you say not violently, but effectively, to make sure that we actually are looking after the interests of ordinary people. Lynette, as always, a great pleasure to catch up with you, and thanks for sharing your thoughts. And let's hope we can catch up again more frequently than the last time, because we actually tried to make a show and I had a power cut, as you may remember, years ago. So that didn't work. But anyway, we will connect again. And thank you once again for coming on today.
Thank you so much.
Take care.